Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Anna's Journey. I am the show's host, Anna Renault, and you can find out more information about me, the show, the books that I write, and all that information on my website, AnnaRenault.com. Before we jump into the show, I always remind people that the shows are recorded, so you could always go back and listen again, or you can share the link with family, friends, and neighbors, anyone that you think might want to know this information. Certainly a big help to go to blogtalkradio.com/Anna-Renault. All the links to all my shows are there. And especially today, since we're going to be talking with Chanel Simmons for Chanel's Tax Help Show number 3. So you can go to blogtalkradio.com/Anna-Renault and find show number 1, show number 2 that we did in August, and then today's show for show number 3. So if you missed anything, you can always go back and listen again. I also need to announce my airtime sponsor, and this month that is Ginny Robertson, LLC. It is a wonderful organization for women who are networking their small businesses or maybe even working for a large business. Ginny has a mission. She strives to give women a safe place from which they can discover and explore their gifts, experiment with self and ideas, create community, help others, and achieve a self-defined success. It has been awesome that I've been a member of Ginny's group since 2001. People tend to come, grow their business, and perhaps leave, and then some of us who stay. Now, I have to admit that I've come in and been an active member for a number of years and then kind of slid away and then came back, found a whole new group of networking friends back and forth for the past 15, 16 years. So it's been an awesome connection for me. Ginny does face-to-face networking groups here in Maryland, and I think there are 8 or 9 meetings a month now, and also one in Virginia. And I believe there's a couple that are going to be connecting in North Carolina and Florida as well, as people tend to move and just really like Ginny's form of networking and organizing local businesses. Ginny also produces One Purpose Woman magazine, and she also does seminars and workshops. She is a fantastic keynote speaker. We'll be talking a little bit more about Ginny at the end of the show, but certainly go to GinnyRobertson.com to find out all the wonderful things that Ginny has to offer, as well as a Facebook page for members, as well as a global page for people around the world. They're also doing now webinars and phone call meetings for people who cannot make the in-person meetings. I also want to give a big shout out to the American Red Cross. For many people, we know that Texas recently got hit hard by Hurricane Harvey, and they need a lot of help. Unfortunately, Hurricane Irma also is creating havoc in the Atlantic, and while we're still not sure if she's going to hit mainland USA, she is definitely going to hit Puerto Rico, which is, believe it or not, part of the United States. It's an unincorporated territory under the guidance and rule of the United States. So it is part of us. It is who the American people are, and they are going to need a ton of help, especially as Irma crosses paths with them as a Category 5 hurricane. So be prepared. Certainly donate to the American Red Cross. They are going to be stretched thin with 2 major catastrophes within just a couple of weeks of each other. And, of course, Texas is way far from recovery. All right, so let's jump into today's show with Chanel Simmons talking about Nell's Tax Help. And if my computer will cooperate here, I will turn on Chanel's microphone. Hello, Chanel. Are you with us?
I'm with you. Good morning. How are you?
There we go. I'm fine, but my computer just wants to be a little slow this morning. I guess since we don't have any sunshine, it hasn't decided to wake up yet. So, it has just been a little bit slow, but now that we're connected, we should be good to go for the rest of the show. If at any time I am not here and not responding, just keep talking because you're connected to Blog Talk Radio and it will go out over the air, but hopefully I won't lose connection.
Okay.
So as I mentioned in the introduction, this is show number 3 for us. And it is awesome to be able to provide so much information to the people who really need to stop and think about what we do when we're in business in terms of our taxes. So before we jump into that, for anybody who hasn't heard show number 1 and show number 2, tell people who you are and how you got into it.
So my name is Chanel Simmons. I have my own company now, Nell's Tax Help, where I service individuals and small business owners, usually in the service industry, with their taxes and as well as their audit needs and bookkeeping and even a little bit of QuickBooks. I used to work for the Internal Revenue Service for 7 years as an revenue agent, where I used to go out to individuals' homes and or businesses and conduct audits on their returns and basically make the assessment to say, you know, this is either correct or not correct. Many different companies, many different individuals. I worked out of the Washington, D.C. area. And other than that, I have an MBA in accounting and finance. I have a cat named Clyde and a wonderful 2-year-old who is the light of my life.
Very good. Wow. Just the idea that you have had feet on the ground going out auditing people for the IRS, I would imagine there are some people who would say, I don't want to talk to her. She's an IRS person. However, you have changed sides from the government side saying, you know, you've done this wrong, you've done this right, whatever, that you're now on the side of the business person or an individual saying, this is how you should do it. This is how you can avoid getting audited. This is the correct way of doing things. So give us a story of how you decided to become your own business.
So very early on in my career as an agent during my training, you know, matter of fact, one of the interview questions they even ask you is if you were sitting across from someone who made minimum wage under $20,000 for the year, and once you were finished with doing the assessment, they owed double that, so they use the example of like $30,000, how comfortable would you be in sitting across a mother of 5 to relaying that information? That's the reality of what I used to have to deal with a lot of times. So a lot of times I was going, I actually sat across a gentleman. He was well-to-do as far as financially. I believe he was into real estate, heavily into real estate, had a lot of rental properties. But he had recently, I didn't know this until I had to relay my information. He had recently suffering cancer. So here I am on top of that, on top of him getting that news a month prior, also telling him, in addition to that, now that I made my adjustments, you know, you're now going to owe the government X amount of dollars. So, you know, good luck with paying us and chemo, you know. It sounds so cruel, but that was the reality of what I would have to do. And too often I would sit across from individuals and business owners, and the common thread I always would hear from all of them was, if only I had someone that I trust to do it right, if only as I had someone who I knew would tell me no, versus just collecting my money and just doing whatever to get me a higher refund, knowing I didn't deserve that, or I just want to make sure it's done right. I really wanted it to be done right, and I thought I was doing it right because I went to, you know, someone that my best friend's mother, brother, sister recommended, or this person told me he was a CPA, so I thought he was doing what he knew to do, and it would always be that same story over and over again. That was always the common thread of, if only I had someone right. And the very few people I worked with as far as fellow tax practitioners who were doing it right, they either had been in taxes their entire career, like myself, where that's all they specialized in it. So they were either a CPA that only did taxes, they were either an enrolled agent. I actually sat across a few other fellow former IRS agents and officers. So taxes were their world, like taxes are my world. And those were usually the audits where if there was nothing wrong, sometimes they even got refunds because they were dealing with a person who this is what they specialized in. Most of the time, whenever there was an issue, it was either they weren't a licensed professional at all, they trusted their wife who took maybe a few bookkeeping classes, or they trusted, you know, someone who basically promised them without even looking at their return, you're going to get $5,000 guaranteed. I can guarantee you $5,000, but you know, and they will just make up things. A CPA, sometimes I tell people all the time, all because you're a CPA does not mean you specialize in taxes. You're familiar with it because that's a part of the exam even, but does not mean you specialize in tax. And vice versa, all because you're an enrolled agent doesn't mean that you know accounting. So as an enrolled agent, you specialize in tax, but you might not be familiar with some of the accounting principles. That's where someone like myself is very unique in that I know tax, I know accounting, and that's where it really is very beneficial to a business owner especially, because you need someone who knows how to do it right from an accounting perspective and also understand how that is going to translate onto the tax return. My heart honestly just went out to these people, and I was thinking to myself, as an agent, I basically am coming in on the back end after years of, you know, you having filed this return, and I'm now coming in and saying, okay, now let me ask you for these documents from 2-3 years ago and to support what you put on this return, and now let's get it right. Whereas if you had saw me beforehand when we prepared it the first time, it most likely, even if the IRS came later, we would have everything, it would have been done right, and you would have been like that agent that would have came to see you, like how when I went to go see these people that worked with IRS agents and CPAs who specialized in taxes and enrolled agents who knew accounting, where they didn't have any adjustments, that could have been them. But instead, they're dealing with someone who they thought was doing it right, and they weren't. So that was honestly the main reason I went out on my own, was the fact that I wanted people to have someone that they could come to that was going to make sure it was done right. So.
Now, you just made a good point that sometimes these audits come up 2-3 years later. I know
mm-hmm.
I have read different things where it says it can happen up to 7 years and that you should
yep.
keep your receipts and your documents for 7 years. It
mm-hmm.
sounds like a lot. I know certainly here in my house I have a ton of paper that sometimes I just want to throw away.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the dates and I say, no, it's still within that 7-year period. I might want to hold on to this a little bit longer. Fortunately, knock on wood, I've never had a problem. and I say that with one exception. I actually had a house fire. And
mm-hmm.
I luckily had gone to someone like you who had done
mm-hmm.
my taxes the previous 3 or 4 years. And I said to Sue, what the heck do I do now? My house has burned down. I have nothing. I have no receipt, no any proof of anything. And she said, there is a way of doing this. No problem. We'll work it out. and she was able to put it together. And again, like I said, I didn't even get audited that year. And it has just been such a mental relief to know that she is a CPA. Her specialty is taxes. That's primarily what she does, her and her husband. And they have an accountant in the office that they work with. And it just makes it so much easier for me. I stop in probably at least twice a year, not in tax season, and say, I'm getting ready to do this. What do I need to keep track of to put this on my taxes come February or March when I do my taxes? How do I document this? It is something that business people need to think about. You don't just go in once a year and say, here's my pile of receipts, you know, do my taxes. What do you recommend to people in terms of their bookkeeping? What do you want to see? Do you want to see them come in with this, and I've seen this, with a brown paper bag full of receipts? You know, it's just...
Okay.
It makes me crazy. It really does.
Okay, so, yeah, in the IRS world, we used to laugh because, like I tell people all the time, the IRS does not care about your expenses. They do, but they don't. They're not going to fish through that. That's on you to prove your expenses and deductions. The only thing they truly care about is income when it comes to IRS. It's in their name. I tell people all the time, it's called IRS, Internal Revenue Service. They're worried about money, like what money are you getting. When it comes to those expenses, you have to prove it yourself. So when people would come in with, like you said, that box or bag of, like, receipts and statements and invoices, and they're all thrown together, we were trained to just hand it right back to them and say, okay, you go ahead and organize that, and when you have that in a much better fashion, then I'll look at your numbers and test it out, because they're not going to look through all that. And it also, even for an accountant or your enrolled agent, it's not fair to them to have to spend those hours going through all of that. And then you get upset because they're going to send you a bill. They're going to, because trust me, our time, you know, is precious. And if I have to spend 2 hours to fish through that box or that, you know, or that bag of stuff, yeah, I'm going to send you a bill because that's time that I could have spent maybe on another return or someone else. In the perfect world, because now that we have so many technological advances at our expense, such as apps, there's like all these apps now where you can take a picture of something and, you know, save it in a PDF format, or even a simple spreadsheet, even a simple notebook. I mean, if you just put it in an organized manner, you can still keep it in that box or bag. If that's the system that works for you, knock yourself out. But it needs to be something where, you know, if you're giving that information to someone else, it's much more easier for us to fish through it. And then, you know, if we needed the supporting document to back up that number that's, let's say, in your notebook or in your spreadsheet or even in something as advanced as, you know, QuickBooks or Great Plains or whatever software you're using, if you do decide to use the software, you have to always be able to back up whatever number you're putting into those systems or in your notebook or on your spreadsheet with the source document. I cannot stress that enough. All because it's in QuickBooks, all because it's on your notebook, that helps, but that's not true proof. True proof is, do you have the canceled check or a copy or a photo? You know how the banks will send you a photo of the canceled check. Is it on the bank statement? Because that's a third party that's now backing up saying, yes, you know, this money or this transaction happened. Is it on the credit card slip? And then with credit cards, you got to be careful with that. You really should always have the backing invoice and or statement that goes with that, because a lot of times the line item on a credit card statement and even on bank statements will just say it's from this merchant. Like, case in point, it'll say, like, let's say you went to Marriott. It'll just say Marriott Hotel. I don't know if that's Marriott Hotel because you went to a conference, or is that Marriott Hotel because you and your family decided to have a weekend away. So you have to have backing invoices, backing receipts. And I know for a lot of people out there, they'll say, oh, that's so much paper. Yes and no. The government understands now that, you know, everybody's gone electronic. As long as you have it, like, scanned in a PDF format or scanned on your little app by taking pictures or whatever the case may be, if you can just prove that at one point in time that that document existed, you don't have to necessarily keep the paper. Now, I will say with paper, I personally am a team of both. I guess maybe that's still a little antiquated or old school of me, but I like both because, you know, having it electronic, it makes it easier to transport it and share it and email it and scan it and all that. But there's something about having it on paper because sometimes, as we all know, computers go corrupt, software gets damaged or lost. Now, what are you going to, or like you said, fires even, and, you know, let's say I might have had it on a computer that got melted in a fire, but I also had the paper document saved in, like, a fireproof chest. So now I still, you know, I still had that. I always say I personally am team, have multiple backups for your proof, but you definitely always need to make sure you have proof if you can.
And I think this actually goes back to maybe show number one when we were talking mm-hmm. about those receipts that say you went to Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
Did you buy a new door for your house, or did you buy a new desk for your office? You know,
mm-hmm.
what is work-related, what is business-related versus what is personal? It is so important to have that documentation. Now,
mm-hmm.
you say that you're old school. I guess I am, too, because I prefer having that paper stuff. I actually
mm-hmm.
have a 3-ring notebook. When my life got a little bit more complicated when I became an author, it was like a whole new world of business for me that I had never been before. I had had a small business from 04 to 09, and I knew what I needed to keep from that business to show her that, you know, this was my income, this was my expense, whatever. But now I'm an author. It's a whole different world. What do I need to keep? How do I show that I had a book signing and I sold 10 books versus maybe only one book? How do I prove this to the government? You know. And then it was also filing that quarterly sales tax report. You know, what do I need to keep? You figure you filed this with the state government, that should be enough. Well, it may or may not be. What do I need to keep? That was one of those visits to my tax person outside of tax time. I certainly did
mm-hmm.
not want to hit her with all these questions in the midst
mm-hmm.
of, you know, tax season. What do I do? How do I do it? What does she need from me so that she can legally, accurately fill out my taxes? It's a reasonable question to ask your tax person. It's reasonable
mm-hmm.
for you, as the me, as the customer, to say, what do I need to do to make sure that I have the information that she needs? So that when we do file the report and we both sign that bottom line saying that what we have filled out is accurate and correct, that we're not lying. You know, that she has seen my 3-ring notebook. Here's my income. Here's my sales tax. Here's my expenses. And mine's a little bit more complicated because I also have a job working for the local newspaper. Here's my mileage. Here's my food receipts from where I've gone to dinner with somebody for an interview. There are all these different kinds of things depending on which W-2 or which 1099 these expenses attach to. What is legal to deduct from this and what's legal to charge to that? And the tax person needs to have that input from me, the customer. You don't have any idea. right? I mean, you really need people to tell you what's what, right?
Absolutely. So, like, a lot of times I try to tell people, and I'm happy you mentioned you visit your tax professional, you know, your CPA, throughout the year. That is so important. Too often what will end up happening is people will meet with their tax professional come tax season. So the year is done. It's usually they'll decide to meet with someone in January or February or March, or sometimes as late as April before it's due. And they'll now ask the question about something that happened in March of the tax year. And it's like, I really wish you had talked to me before you did it, or even maybe shortly afterwards, because while the tax year is still open, there might have been things, if in fact it would end up being a tax consequence to you, meaning that it might have caused you to have a higher tax bill, or you know, increase your income, whatever it may be, we might be able to strategize and sit down and figure out ways to now correct it if it caused the problem, or maybe even capitalize on it. If it's something good that you're doing and it's really helping out your situation, maybe had you talked to your tax professional earlier about it, we would maybe have encouraged you and say, you know, this would be great if you do it again, because now we can save you even more money. So it's great to always keep the conversation with your tax professional open throughout the year. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, though, making sure, though, you do have a credible tax professional. A lot of times these fly-by-night people are literally that. They're available from January to April, but then you can't get a hold of them at all throughout the rest of the year. So it's also good to make sure whoever you're dealing with deals in taxes throughout the year, like myself. You know, I'm available all the time. I'm available now. You know, you want to always have that conversation, and you also want to just sometimes, like you said, just maybe just even if not necessarily stopping by, shoot a quick email and just say, hey, you know, we're thinking about doing this. What do you think? And we can let you know. It's just good to always just bounce it off, because you don't want it to be something where had you just asked that one question about it, you would have been advised differently. And you would have been told that, you know, hey, this is not good for you, or maybe hold off, because sometimes timing is an issue. Maybe it might not be good for you this year, but maybe next year when something else you know is coming up, maybe this will be the year to do it. These are all the things that a tax professional is going to sit down and work with you on, and always have your best interest for yourself and your company if you are a business owner at heart and in mind. Whereas, you know, you yourself, you may not know all that. You may not know all the different strategies available to you that's legally available to you. There's a lot that can be done to help you with your taxes and keep your tax liability as low as possible within the law if you just use us. And that's what we're here for. So, yeah.
Well, there again, that's another good point that I was hoping we would be able to pinpoint, is the timing of doing certain things. I know there are a lot of people that come October, November, December, they hurry up and they do all kinds of things that they think will benefit them in terms of expenses that will mm-hmm. lower their tax for that year. And at least once I met with my person and she said, you've already met your deductible, you've already, you know, exceeded what you really need. If you hold off and do this in January or February of next year, you will have met your deductible next year. Mm-hmm. And you might want to think about that, because mm-hmm. it's only going to make a few dollars difference in your refund this year, but it will already put you ahead of the game next year.
Next year.
And again, it's not something I thought about, but it's
exactly.
her business to think about that. And that's where that tax professional came in. Now, I also wanted to bring up the fact that we keep talking about tax season January to April. Mm-hmm. I remember, I guess it was the first show, you mentioned the people that had asked about the extension. That's coming up. That's right around the corner.
Actually, it's funny you mentioned that. All of you out there who have partnership returns, or if you're a multi-member LLC that's taxed as a partnership, or an S corporation, your return, if you had filed a timely extension, is due in 10 days. It's due September the 15th. They're due September the 15th. And then, of course, anybody, individual, 1040, Schedule C business owners, Schedule F for my farmers out there, and C corporations. So those are the 1120 returns. If you filed a timely extension back in April, your returns are going to be due on October the 16th this year. The reason why it's not the October 15th is because October 15th is on a Sunday. But October the 16th, yes. Yep.
And there again, these are things that people tend to forget, and then they get into trouble. And then if you don't meet that deadline, there are penalties, right?
Yeah, at this point, there is no more there are no more extensions. Now, of course, those rare circumstances, like, you know, such as someone who might have, like, okay, case in point, the people right now who are going through Harvey and, you know, Hurricane Harvey, and Florida who's gearing up for Irma, they might get an exception. The people of Harvey already have, because, you know, they're in a state of emergency and everything. So, you know, if they were to probably send their return a little later, and if they have a valid reason, you know, my stuff was flooded and I'm trying to get everything together, then, yes, the government's not cruel, at least with the IRS anyway. They're not cruel, and they're not going to say, you know, oh, well, you should have met your debt. They'll say, okay, you had what they call reasonable cause why you couldn't meet that deadline. But everybody else, no, you're due at this time, unless you have some kind of extraneous circumstance as to why you couldn't meet that deadline. Yes, you will definitely incur a penalty. The failure to file penalty starts off at 5% of taxes due for every month that you don't file it, up to 25%. So, you know, for the person who owes, let's say, $1,000, you know, if you continue to forget about it and let it go, after 5 months go by, you now incur $250 worth of you know, fees. That's not fun. You know, and interest.
Especially since a lot of people file the extension because they figure they don't have their paperwork together and they really can't afford this or that. You know, and there again, that's something else. When they file the extension in April, do they have to make any payment at that point?
Yes, you do. That's why I said valid. It has to be a valid extension, because now if you know you're going to get a refund, like there's no doubt that you're definitely getting a refund. You filed that extension, you're good. You're good to go. But I will advise those people who, you know, you filed an extension, definitely do your return. Don't wait multiple years. You forfeit your refund if you don't file within 2 years of when you were supposed to. So, no, they're not going to hit you with any penalties or fees because there's no taxes to penalize. But if you just wait on it and say, well, you know, I'm supposed to get a refund anyway, so I'm not going to really file, you will forfeit that refund after 2 years of not filing. After that point, the government is going to, even though you would have filed a return, the government will keep its money and say, you know, you should have claimed this in a timely fashion. And it's your money, actually. It's your money, you know, that you're supposed to get back. But you will forfeit it if you don't. For those of you who know you're definitely going to owe, when you had filed that extension, hopefully, if you're a W-2 person, or if you sent estimated tax payments, you sent enough during the year prior to it being due. So prior to April, like during 2016 of last year, you sent in enough payments or had enough withheld from your wages to basically, you know, cover most of what you would have owed, up to 90% of what you would have owed this year, or 100% of what you've paid the prior year in taxes, to avoid what they call estimated tax penalties. That's different from failure to file penalties. As long as you did that when you sent the extension, or once you sent the extension, you sent in additional money before April the 15th to pretty much cover yourself. If you did all that, you're fine. You're good to go. If, in fact, you did not send in enough money, technically your extension could be deemed not valid. So, therefore, they're going to say that your past due, you know, you were supposed to file your return back in April, even though you asked for an extension. It could be in a system that, yeah, that's true, but once you did your return for for 2016, it wasn't enough that you sent in, so it's not valid. So, therefore, technically, you know, your return was due in April, and now we're going to penalize you. So, it can be very serious.
It is a very complicated system. There's no ands, ifs, and buts about that. What is a late return? What is past due fees? What is, you know, when you file something and you take, like last year, there were, I think, 5 different tax places here in my area of Baltimore that were closed down because they were promising people a guaranteed return. Now, they don't know me from Adam. I'm walking in the door with my paperwork, and they're saying, I guarantee that you're going to get $1,500 return. And it's like, really? I've never had that much of a return. You know, I'm lucky if I get $200. What are you going to put on my return that's going to guarantee me, you know, a $1,500 return? 5 of them were closed down for being illegal tax preparers. And you just, you know, you need to have somebody who is legal, trained, all that kind of stuff, that really knows the difference between what's on time, which schedule you need to prepare, especially if you're in business, you know. How do you prove your income? Do you have a W-2? Do you have a 1099? Do you have, like you said, those bank statements or something that shows where your money is coming and going, and then have those receipts to back it up? Because, you know, you don't want to mess with the IRS. You really don't. They really have some power over your checking account, your future checks if they get dinged for deductions for money you owe. There are all kinds of things that you really don't want to mess with the IRS.
You really don't. I mean, and there's a reason that's almost – it's not their slogan by no means, but, like, I feel like sometimes that is their slogan, like, don't mess with the IRS. I mean, they're literally trained. Like, I remember when I was there, they were trained to basically, like, not only just look for it in the sense of, you know, they have summonsing power, meaning that they can summons your checking account. They can summons your loan statements. They can summons PayPal. Like, a lot of people will say, oh, you know, I don't really have PayPal stuff. And then they're like, oh, yeah, okay, well, we see it. We're going to go ahead and get the information from there. They can contact your previous employers. I mean, there's a lot of power. Like you said, they can summons you. Like, some people will say, like, I don't want to meet with them, and they'll get a representative to represent them. But if in fact they really have a good case as to why they need to talk directly to you, they can still summons you to talk to them as well. So it's a lot of power at hand. But I don't want people to think that the IRS is, like, horribly mean. Usually when they get to the point where they're going to go and levy and put liens on you, you have ignored them. That's usually what has happened at that point. They are so willing to work with you and talk with you, set up installment agreements, consider what is your financial situation, and try to work out something with you. Now, of course, if you have the money to pay it, you just don't want to, then, of course, they're going to, you know, use their muscle and use everything they have in their arsenal to get their money. But if you are truly in a situation where you cannot afford, the worst thing you could possibly do is avoid those notices. Do not avoid them. Do not ignore them. Do not put them in the corner, because then at that point, then they are going to go and they're going to garnish, you know, wages. They're going to go ahead and put levies on your bank statements. They only take people's homes after it's been about a year or two since they have not heard anything from you. You know, it takes a long time before it gets to that process. Like, that's what people don't understand. People just think, oh, it just happens overnight because I didn't pay my bill. No. Months, years of not hearing from you, and now they're like, okay, well, maybe this will get your attention. So
and it does. It really, really does. And of course, that's when people call in the news people and say, oh, look how terrible the IRS is. And then, of course, the real story comes out that, like you said, you got this notice and you ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
Chanel, we are actually going to run out of time again.
Oh, no.
But, yeah, I know. But I do thank you for doing all three shows and giving so much information to the listeners, that I really do hope that some people call you and say, you know, what about this? What about that? So give your contact information again.
Not a problem. So you can contact me. You can schedule actually appointments directly onto my website, which is www.nelstaxhelp.com. And Nels is NELSTAXHELP.com. Or you can phone me directly at 443-868-7629. I'm also on Facebook, so you can like my Facebook page, which is just Nels Tax Help. I've committed to once a week. If you enjoy getting all these tips once a week, I'm giving out just, you know, little free tidbit tips through my T-Tax Talk. So like yesterday we did one on medical expenses. So, you know, you can always feel free to check me out there as well.
Well, certainly medical expenses is one of my biggies. And there again, I've often asked my tax person, doesn't this look really crazy? Isn't this going to raise a red flag? And she said, you know, when they look at the fact that you have cancer, this
mm-hmm.
is, you know, just a tiny drop in the bucket kind of thing. And fortunately or unfortunately, because I pay all this money for insurance, I don't have as much out of pocket anymore, but who can afford to pay for two health insurance programs that
right.
will pay for the majority of my treatment and stuff? But I'm still here, so you're stuck with me. Thank you so much, and I will
you're
look
welcome.
At your tip, because certainly medical is a biggie, and I try to advise people again, if you have a tax person, don't wait until January when they're just flooded with tax returns. Go now while they're hopefully in their slow season, unless they just happen to have a ton of people that filed extensions. But there
right.
again, if you're a person that filed an extension, you're running out of thanks a
right
lot now.
Down.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I want to give a big shout-out to Ginny Robertson. She is my monthly airtime sponsor this month. She strives to connect women around the world with their gifts and their purpose, and certainly gives them a safe place to experiment with new ideas, create community, help others, and achieve a self-defined success. And that's a biggie. What is a success for you? What do you consider to be a success? Ginny has a ton of stuff that she does. Check out her website, ginnyrobertson.com. Don't forget to donate to the American Red Cross. They need blood. They need money. They are going to get hit certainly in Puerto Rico and possibly in Florida. And, of course, they're still working with people in Texas. Thanks a lot for listening to Anna's Journey. I will be back on the air next week, I believe, with more shows with financial help as well as authors and other topics. Thanks a lot for listening.